And now, Evangelist Lonnie Jones.
It is an honor to be in this program and be speaking for you, especially since I'm not a hired gun from out of town. I've been kind of giving Aubrey a hard time all week about this, or even all summer, because of all things, number one, why am I supposed to be the expert on the mistakes of marriage? You know, he calls all the other speakers and asks him. He called Jackie's mom and said, "Hey, what should Lonnie speak on?" She said, "The mistakes of marriage." And then they assigned me to fudge and brownie night. And I complained about that one day at lunch, and Lisa said, "Well, you could have been assigned shortcake night," and I let that go. I was going to give you my David Letterman top 10 list of the mistakes in marriage, and Aubrey gave you one, the word "I do." Somewhere in that list was, "Sure, we can have a cat. Yes, honey, I'll go to Walmart with you." I think starting at number 5 is, "It would be a good idea for your mother to come and spend a month." Number 4 is, "It would be a good idea for your mother to come and spend a month." Number 3 is, "It would be a good idea for your mother to come." No. All right, we'll get on with it. When I think about the top 10 mistakes of marriage, I'm really not as concerned with the mistakes as I am the avoiding of them. I think if you ask different people at different times in their lives, a couple that's just brand new married is going to be vulnerable to 10 things different than a couple who's been married 25 or 30 years. And yet you could take a survey and see what causes marriages to break up. And a lot of times we focus not on the actual problems, but on symptoms of problems. Stenae Walters and Stenae, in their book, Relationships and Marriage and the Family, which is used as a textbook by Faulkner University in their BBA program, basically did a survey. Stenae was involved in the actual survey. They surveyed 3,000 different families, and they surveyed multicultural families. They surveyed Americans, Canadians, people from South America, from Ghana, all different areas. And basically they took this research and they asked them, number one, you know, rate your family success, what's your longevity, delinquency among your children, this, that, and the other. And they compiled all that information. And when you compile all that information together from 3,000 different families from all over the world, 6 things stood out that all strong families have as a main characteristic. The 6th quality of a strong family is listed by Stenae Walters and Stenae. And I think their names were Stennett Walters and Stennett before they got their PhD. But now Stenae Walters and Stenae. The 6th quality of a strong family are as follows. A family shows appreciation for each other. A family spends time together. A family has commitment to each other and to certain ideals. A family has good communication patterns. A family has spiritual wellness. Now this is, the family has a spiritual lifestyle. Not that they are religious, but they have a spiritual lifestyle. And then the 6th one was that they have some kind of ability to deal with crisis. Now, if those are the 6 qualities of a strong family, and you're going to start trying to think about how in the world am I going to identify the top 10 mistakes in a marriage, my first 6 are going to be this list. If you're going to find a marriage, you're going to make it vulnerable, then of course the failure to appreciate one another, the failure to spend time together, the failure to really zero in on commitment, the failure to have good communication, failure to have some kind of spiritual basis, and the failure to be able to deal with crisis in a positive way or in a proactive way rather than a reactive way, those are going to make your marriage vulnerable. Well, instead of trying to take those things and deal with them one by one, I think those are probably things that can be dealt with not from a set of rules but from a set of values. And I'd like to start out tonight with a discussion and tie it back in from Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. Someone asked me, if you only had one chance, one shot at an audience to speak to them, what would you speak on? And I guess you'd have to spend your time with Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Because in Jesus' famous sermon, He deals with the crux of the gospel. He deals with the crux of religion. He deals with the crux of Christianity. In a book entitled, "Are You Righteous or Merely Religious?" the Sermon on the Mount is outlined in a very specific way. If you notice, as Jesus sits down on the mountain, He begins to teach the people in Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through around 16. Jesus is going to set out an ideal. He gives a list of the Beatitudes or the beautiful attitudes. He's going to talk about blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who are hungry and thirsty for righteousness, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are those who are persecuted because of their righteousness' sake. After He goes through the list of the ideal situation, He says, if you live this way and let your light so shine, then the people around you will glorify God. And after He makes His very short 16-verse introduction, then we get to the disclaimer. Matthew chapter 5, 17. Do not think that I came to destroy the law and the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. If somebody walks up to you and says, now, don't get the idea that I'm trying to hurt your feelings. What do you think they're about to tell you? Now, I don't mean this to sound bad. I don't want this to upset you. When Jesus begins His statement with this crowd of people here at this mountain, the scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Levites scattered out in this crowd, it was probably an ominous sound as it is when somebody breaks open a shotgun and drops a shell at it. Don't get the idea that I'm here to destroy the law and the prophets. Jesus has just warned everybody that the things I'm going to say are going to sound so different than what you've been saying, you're going to think I'm here to destroy the law and the prophets. In fact, Jesus says, in fact, the law and the prophets, not one jot or one tittle will pass away. A jot is just a little dot you make with an ink. And a tittle, if you've ever drawn or written with a quill pen, is that little ink trail that you leave when you drag your pen from one word to the other. Jesus said a dot or an ink stroke is not going to pass away from the law till all is fulfilled. I don't want you to think I'm here to destroy it, but I'm here to make it full. I'm here to make it full to filling and overflowing. What Jesus is saying is, I'm going to tell you what completes the law. And then He makes His next statement. Whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you, unless the righteousness you practice on a personal, individual basis, unless your righteousness exceeds, surpasses, or goes beyond the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter into the kingdom of heaven. Jesus says, this is my idea of righteousness. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. Now guys, I want you to understand, I'm not here to destroy anything. I'm not here to mess up a system. But let me tell you something. Unless your righteousness goes beyond the righteousness of your leaders, you will not in any way, shape, or form see the kingdom of God. What Jesus is saying is, your religious leaders have something that's keeping them from a righteousness standing with God, from a relationship with God. And what Jesus will do with the rest of the Sermon on the Mount is He will identify four roadblocks to a relationship with God. The rest of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is going to talk about four things that stand in the way from a person being righteous. And righteousness is a requirement for a relationship with God. So if we want to just take this and just kind of extrapolate a little bit, if these things would block me from having a relationship with God, these things would also block me from having a relationship with my spouse. These things would block me from having a relationship with my children. These things would block me from having a good relationship with anybody. And Jesus is going to deal with four basic attitudes that will cure the top 10 mistakes in marriage. The first thing Jesus is going to deal with is going to come from the section of Matthew chapter 5, verses 21, almost all the way down to chapter 6. If you read the manuscript by Gerald Jones entitled Righteous or Merely Religious, you'll find that the number one thing he's going to talk about in this section is what he calls legalism. Legalism is a good thing when it starts out properly. It is where somebody says, I'm going to do everything I can to satisfy everything the law says. But when you take legalism and you turn it into something that looks for loopholes, and you look for something that doesn't teach you how close you can get to serving God, but how close you can get to doing evil and still not cross the line, then it becomes a misuse, it becomes an abuse. When we begin to take legalism and put them into our families, we destroy a couple of things. First of all, we destroy our relationship because it ceases to be a relationship, becomes a ritual. We cease to be motivated by the things that cause us to want to serve each other out of love and begin to serve each other from things out of rules' sake. I see so many people in marriage distress, and they come in and somebody says, well, this person was unfaithful to me. It gives me the right for a divorce. And when you realize that there's been no communication, there's been no intimacy, there's been constant badgering, there may have even been long periods of inactive sexual contact, and then this person says, I've got the right because they broke a technicality. Folks, that's not a relationship based on the spirit of what God wants. That's a relationship based on the letter of what God said. And we begin to live our lives and we begin to treat our spouses according to the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. We violate some of the basic principles of a strong family. One of those is appreciation. See, when I begin to think, I'm the husband, you're the wife, and because you're the wife, these are your jobs as outlined in our prenuptial agreement. You have to do this, 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 and this. I didn't promise to love my dishwasher. Didn't promise to love my cook. I promised to love, honor, and cherish without a qualifier on the end of it. And we try to become legalistic in our interpretation of our vows. We begin to do our spouse a disservice. See, the vow that we made was not based on ifs. The vow was made as a vow. So the first thing that will destroy a relationship with God and the first thing that will destroy a relationship with our spouse is when we get too worried about the externals and not the internals. When we begin to focus on rules instead of values. When our relationship becomes a ritual, then we're headed for trouble. Basically, it's when we start taking each other for granted and no appreciation is shown. You have to do this because you're the husband. You have to do this because you're the wife. No, that's legalism talking. You do this because you love one another. I do this because I love you, and you do this because you love me. Then that's when you get real emotion. That's when you get real value. Listen to what Jesus talks about on some things. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. And whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Jesus is talking about that if we're going to be people who make our marriages survive, we're going to have to be people who can survive onslaughts of personal attacks. See, a lot of times we want to be able to say that he's not treating me right or she's not doing this just according to my satisfaction. So I have the right to say they're being unfaithful and I have the right to leave. Notice what Jesus says. If someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him your other cheek also. If you're sitting close enough to somebody that you know pretty well, y'all face each other. Now take your right hand, very gently, tap them on the right cheek. Now, if you are facing a person and you're right dominant and you hit them like this, folks, you hit their left cheek. In order for me to slap you on your right cheek with my right hand, I've got to backhand you. Jesus is not talking about if somebody walks up to you and gives you a little pop, you turn the other cheek also. Jesus says, if in your relationship with other people, someone walks up to you and treats you with utter contempt, if you're in a relationship with my Father, you present to them the other cheek. Folks, this is not about you don't make me as happy as you used to and I have the right to leave. Because when somebody says, I promise to love you and I promise to honor you and I promise to be faithful to you for better or for worse, it means there is some enduring to be done on bad days. Now, don't get on a horse and ride to China on this. I'm not talking about severe spousal abuse that needs to be treated clinically, that needs to be treated legally. I'm talking about the kind of things that I see mess marriages up are no more than little fusses and spats and fights. And Jesus said, if you're going to be children of my Father, you're going to have to quit interpreting your vows according to legalism and understand that you promised to stay in this thing for the long run. That what you're here to do is not see how little abuse you can take, but see how much you can give. Folks, we've got folks pulling the plug on marriages that got no business doing it. They're looking for an excuse to leave and let this thing disintegrate. Now, there are some situations where for your safety and your life and for the life and the safety of the children, there needs to be some action taken. But folks, I'm not talking about people looking for excuses. When Jesus says, if you want to be children of my Father, you're going to have to quit the legalism. Notice this. You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, so that they will begin to treat you nicely and they will like you and say good things about you. That's not how your Bible reads, is it? When people mistreat you, when people say bad things about you, when people do things to you that are unjust, and you treat them in a good way, and you love your enemies, and you pray for them, and you do those things, verse 45 says, that you may be sons of your Father. When Jesus talks about relationships with people, He says you treat people the way you treat people, not on how they're going to react to you, but on a mindset that says, I am going to fulfill a criterion. That I'm going to be able to look myself in the mirror and say, I am a child of God. Love your enemies. Pray for those who abuse you and spitefully use you. Now understand, I'm not talking about severe cases of abuse here. I'm not talking about folks who need medical and clinical intervention. Jesus says you react to people this way not because it will change them, but because it has a changing effect on you and because it makes you a child of God. First roadblock to a relationship with God is legalism. And I would like to offer to you tonight that that's the first roadblock to a relationship with anybody is when we begin to interpret our relationship based on a legalistic structure where our relationship becomes a ritual, where we put the letter of the law before the spirit of the law. Second thing that is a roadblock to a relationship with God will be found in chapter 6, and it's called egotism. Notice this. Chapter 6, verse 1. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them, otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. Skip on down to verse 5. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Verse 16, moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to men to be fasting. What Jesus says next is that if you're going to avoid the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, if you're going to supersede it, if you're going to go beyond it, first thing you've got to avoid is legalism. The second thing you've got to avoid is egotism, where I do what I do so you'll like me. I do what I do so I'll look popular. So I'll do what I do so I'll look cool. So I'll do what I do so that I will have praise of men. He says, you don't get wrapped up in your own ego. When people get wrapped up in their own egos, they see no one else but themselves. They see only their wants. They do not see the needs of others. James says that where selfishness is, every other evil exists. And folks, if an ego is a roadblock to a relationship with God, it is definitely a roadblock to a relationship with a spouse. Just look at if you look at the six qualities of a strong family, and you put somebody with an out of proportion ego there, first of all, they don't appreciate other people. self-made men worship their makers. People who are egomaniacs will not spend time with their family. They only spend time with their own pursuits. That may be a hobby. That may be a career. That may be anything where self comes first. They will not have good communication pattern because they will not listen to the other person. They think they've got to do all the talking. And a person without a good ego structure is not going to be spiritually well because they're going to think, why do I need God? I'm sufficient. And when it comes time to deal with a crisis, a person whose ego is too big for their own good is going to take care of number one. I was in Hardee's several years ago with Jerry Tanner. Jerry was a seventh grader, very small, mousy little guy. A dude came into Hardee's, and I used the word dude on purpose. He was wearing black leather and a ponytail and gloves with the fingers cut out and boots with chains on them. And he got his biscuit. I don't know if you've ever tried to be tough and carry a little bag out of Hardee's or not, but you know, he grabbed that thing by the neck and he walked up to the door and he went, and he stepped back. And he hit that door again. Plainly on the door it said, pull. So he finally realized to pull the door. He reached out and grabbed it, and Jerry Tanner, standing there beside me, said, yeah, it's hard to be bad when you're stupid. I put my arm around him lovingly. I said, young man, if it ever comes down to being me or you, it's going to be you, okay? I'd have fed him to that dude, all right? When somebody's ego gets too far out of whack, and they've got to sacrifice themselves to make this marriage work, it'll never happen. When somebody says, I'll not give up my wants, I'll not give up my needs, I'll not give up my pride, I'll not give anything from me, you do all that, it's a done deal. It's over. If we're going to avoid some of the top 10 mistakes of marriage, we're going to have to start elevating our spouse above ourselves. Remember what Paul writes when he writes to the Ephesians? He said, submit to one another out of your reverence for Christ. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. And there you have it. One of the problems that destroys most of our marriages is when somebody's ego becomes more important than the marriage itself. There's no I in the letter, in the word team. And a husband and wife are a team. They're a partnership. They're friends. They're companions. And we elevate one of us above the other. We sin wrongly. Jesus said, this church is the most important thing to me. I will sacrifice myself for it in order to present it to God in a certain way. Husbands, you have that responsibility to keep your ego in check. I don't care how many figures the salary has or what kind of car we drive. The most important thing is whether or not we present that lady to God in an acceptable fashion. Because that's how Christ loved His church. And egotism has no place in our families. If we don't avoid egotism, look at the things we violate. We violate appreciation. We violate spending time. We violate all six of the qualities of a strong marriage. Jesus said, if you're going to see my Father, if you're going to go into the kingdom, you've got to do better than the Pharisees are doing. And here's the things they're doing wrong. First of all, their legalism is in their way. It's a legalism from the wrong standpoint, looking for loopholes rather than trying to actually please God. Their egotism, they want praise from men rather than praise from God. And then the third roadblock to a relationship with God and a roadblock to a relationship with our spouses is what we're going to call materialism. Matthew chapter 6, 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Jesus said, one of the things that interferes with people serving my Father, one of the things that gets in the way of people being in a relationship with my Father like they're supposed to be in, is because they get distracted by the things of this planet and not by the things of His kingdom. Materialism reaches its peak. It has its most devastating effect when we look at our families and we say things are more important than people. Things are more important than time. Folks, I travel as part of my job. I don't travel all the time. Summer's tough, and I know you think I've had a bad summer, but when the kids get back in school, I won't be traveling anywhere. It'll be a wonderful thing. When I go on a trip, I take Lonnie Beth gifts. I get her whatever I can find, little things to take to her. Do you know what the main thing that happens the day after I come home from a trip? She gets up. She says, "Dad, can I go to work with you today?" It doesn't matter if I brought her a Barbie or a horse or anything else. She says, "Dad, things don't replace time with you." And no matter the kind of toys she has or the kind of clothes she wears, when we forget that people are more important than things, we've fallen into the materialism trap. On a personal note, my mom and dad were not rich people. They are not rich people. And the thing that my dad gave to us more often than anything else was his time. I often wondered why he wore those work clothes all the time. I go home, I change out of the clothes that I've been in the office all day, or if I go out and cut wood, I come in and I change. I'd come in from school or come in from work at Hardee's, and my dad'd be sitting on the couch in those white pants and that white derby shirt and those knee-high black rubber boots. I realized eventually that he was too tired to change clothes, but would go out in the yard and push us on a rope swing, or throw a softball, or lie down on his belly, propped up on his elbows in the dirt, and ask me what I was pretending to be doing. And folks, the Joneses have never been known for the things that we have. But I don't know anybody that I grew up with that didn't want to spend time at my house because my folks were there. Moms and dads, quit trying to buy each other off. Quit trying to buy your kids. There's nothing you can have on this planet that another man can't steal, another man can't destroy, and that will not disintegrate into cosmic dust at the end of time. And time will end. And how will you have spent it with your family? If you want to avoid some of the top 10 mistakes of marriage, you have to make a commitment to spend time together. And the greatest thing that keeps us from spending time with one another is spending too much time bowing the knee to the almighty dollar. And folks, it's just not worth it in the long run. You have to eat. You have to pay the bills. You have to live. But folks, we don't have to have two car garages and a boat in one of the car garages. People are more important than things. And things do not take the place of time that you spend with one another. By the way, when you get so worried about how much you have and what you have, notice what happens next. As Jesus begins this discussion and He talks about where your treasure is, that where your heart be also, notice what takes the place in our heart. "Therefore I say to you," verse 25, "do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or what you'll drink, nor about your body, what you'll put on. Is life not more than food and the body more than clothing?" The minute we sell out to materialism, instead of our mind seeking God and our mind seeking our family, our mind thinks about, "What am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? What am I going to have?" Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or gather into barns, yet your Heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than a bird? Why, yes. And if God will take care of a bird and God will take care of the flowers in the field, will He not also take care of us? "Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek, and your Heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." Matthew 6:33, as Jesus talks about materialism, He's going to give us one of the things that destroys our spiritual wellness. Because when He talks about materialism, He's also going to add to that, that when you begin to serve money, you begin to neglect God. Materialism makes us forget to spend time with one another. Materialism makes us forget to spend time with God. And when our mind is on things, our minds are not on the Father and His kingdom. Roadblocks to a relationship with God, representative in Jesus' famous Sermon on the Mount. He says, if these things will interfere with a relationship with God, I offer to you that they will interfere with a relationship with our spouses. Legalism, egotism, materialism, and the last one, of course, is criticism. As Jesus begins to talk to His audience in Matthew chapter 7, "Judge not, that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck out of your eye and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye and then you will see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. What Jesus is basically saying here is so many times we end up spending our time telling people what's wrong with them instead of what's right with them. Folks, I knew from day one that Jackie Wallace did not become Mrs. Lonnie Jones because she had any delusions of my perfection. Okay? She could have married a tall guy who could sing and been wrapped up, alright? And she didn't. Not only did she not marry a tall guy or one who could sing, she married a guy who was never going to have any money. And I'm just a little bit weird. Okay? And I mean, let's just face it. She could have done a lot better. She did not marry me because I was perfect, and she has not spent her whole life trying to, A, keep me perfect or make me perfect. On our 5th anniversary, I drew for her a picture of her holding Lonnie Beth. It's done with all dots. If you ever come to the house, I'll be glad to show it to you. Beside that picture is the lyrics of a Bob Seger song, and Bob Seger can't sing either, that's why he's my hero. There's a list of the words of a Bob Seger song entitled, It's You. And the bottom line from the Bob Seger song is that when there's times that I just want to disappear, it's you. And I do not really honestly believe that I would be on this planet if it were not for Jackie. Because I'd have given up a long time ago. And the thing that I find the most courage in is that with all the imperfections that I have, she does not dwell on them. She tells me what I can do and what I do well and encourages me in those things. And she is not a criticizer. And folks, if you want to avoid the top 10 mistakes in marriage, if you want to make sure that the 6 qualities of a strong family are there and intact, we've got to be people who praise one another and not criticize one another. And the odd thing is we criticize folks about such little bitty, teeny tiny, itsy bitsy, non-important things. Dr. Douglas Tate says that if anything is important enough to repeat more than twice in your house, write it down and stick it on a mirror or on the refrigerator or tape it to the remote control so he can find it. And do not let yourself become the nag person in your house. Do not accept the role of being the person who is the nitpick police. Let your communication be positive with your spouse. Let your communication be positive with your children. Let your communication be positive with your employees and with your elders. Because you see, one of the things that destroys a relationship is that if all the communication I get is negative feedback. Jesus, when talking to this crowd of people, says, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. I believe what he was saying was, unless you get a better grip on having a relationship with God, you're not going to survive spiritually. Now, here are the things. Here are the 4 things that interfere with your relationship with God. Legalism, egotism, materialism, and criticism. You get those things out of the way, then you can have a proper relationship with God. I believe that we can take those same things, and if we remove them from our marriages, we can avoid the top 10 mistakes, whatever those mistakes are. If those mistakes are lying, if it's lust, if it's adultery, if it's chemical abuse, if it's physical abuse, if it's psychological abuse, those 4 things, when removed from our relationships, can remove any problems that we might have. Oh, by the way, Jesus basically said the same thing when he began the Sermon on the Mount. So interesting when you look at the Beatitudes and the qualities of a strong family. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Appreciate who you are and who you have. You know, interesting when we sit back and look at ourselves in perspective of the lady who chose to marry us. How humbling it is, gentlemen. We think about this special created creature that God made to be a companion to men, and this one chose to be with me. That's a humbling experience if you ever think about it in the proper way. Blessed are those who mourn. That's a person who's willing to look at the things that's going on in their lives and make some changes. That's a person who's willing to say, I've got a commitment to make this marriage work, and therefore I've got to be willing to be able to make some things fit, so I've got to be able to say I'm wrong in this area and fix it. Blessed are the meek. Meekness is defined in its actual sense and used as an example of a person who controls a horse. Have you ever put a horse in a headlock? I've got this theory in life about wrestling. Control the head, control the body. If you're 5'4" and you walk up to a big horse and you hook him in a headlock and he wants to throw you over the barn, you're gone, all right? And yet you put my little wife on the back of a horse and put a rein in his mouth, and that horse yields his power to her control. That's what meekness is. Meekness is not weakness. If you want to avoid some of the mistakes of marriage, you want to fit into this sixth quality of a strong family, then you've got to be able to say, I'm going to let the other person's needs control the choices I make. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. That's spiritual wellness right there. A good example I heard was you take a guy by the back of the head and just stick his head under the water and hold him there. And when you pull him up and he goes, aah! If you ever want righteousness as bad as you wanted air, you understand what Jesus was talking about. And folks, if we want to avoid some of these mistakes in marriages, if we want to put the six qualities of a strong family in our lives, one of those things that was constant in all those 3,000 families was a spiritual wellness. And spiritual wellness is not about obeying rules. Spiritual wellness is about hungering and thirsting for what is right with God. Blessed are the merciful. That is when your ego says, you can't do that to me. No, no, no. Merciful says, if God can forgive me, I can forgive you. Blessed are the pure in heart. You know what 100% pure orange juice means. Ladies want pure gold and real diamonds, not zirconians. That is, when we begin to deal with our family, we deal with them with a commitment to be pure in our pursuits. The commitment that says, I'm going to love you regardless. Not I'm going to love you when you're successful, I'm not going to love you when you're rich, and I'm going to love you regardless. Pure in the heart, the seat of the emotions. Blessed are the peacemakers. What is the major problem of crisis in our homes? Because everybody wants peace, but we want to have peace because we get our way. There's a difference in being a peace lover and a peacemaker. A peacemaker is somebody who says, I'm going to give for you in order to make this thing work. And then the bottom line is, blessed are those who are persecuted because of their attempts to be righteous. Folks, it's not about how people treat me, because I don't have any control over how you treat me. I only have the power to control how I treat you. And I can treat you like a son of God would treat you, or I can treat you like someone who's not a son of God. And when I endure persecution, when I endure personal hardship, when I endure inconvenience, when I endure suffering, because I'm trying my best to be righteous, have a relationship with God, then my relationship with you can only improve. I haven't told you anything that you don't know. I haven't told you anything you've never heard. But I hope I've told you in a way that makes it to where you don't have to go find a book on psychology. All you need is this book to find out how to avoid the top 10 mistakes of marriage. Because Jesus says, here's how you treat people, Here's the four things you leave out of your life. And if you don't have those things in your life, He even gives you the self-help book to do it. Because you see, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, he who seeks will find, and to him who knocks it will be open. What man among you is there, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask Him? Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do ye likewise unto them. For this is the law and the prophets. Folks, Jesus lays all this heavy stuff on us about the Beatitudes and the things that we should avoid. And at the end of it, He says, by the way, if you don't have it all down right, if you're not perfect, ask, knock, and seek, and God will bless you. If you want to avoid the top 10 mistakes of marriage, ask God, Father, remove those things in my life that keep me from being a good spouse. Father, mold me in Your image. Read these three short chapters and pray the prayer, Father, help me be what I read. Look, if we're the kind of people that we are, the kind of people who are so sinful and so evil that God had to sacrifice His only Son to save us from ourselves, and we can give good gifts to our children, don't you think God knows how to give us exactly what we need? Beware false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, and inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. Folks, don't be out here telling people that what you want is a Christian home, and let materialism run it. Don't be out here saying, all I want is to marry a good Christian man or a good Christian woman, and out here dating people who don't have the same values that you do with God. I don't know, 15 years ago, Joe Beam was speaking at Harding University, and I was sitting by Jackie on a date. And he drew this triangle. He said, God is at the top, and here's a man and here's a woman. If the man and the woman run toward each other, they're still separated from God. If the man and woman run away from God and toward each other, they're still separated from God. But if this man will do everything he can to go toward God, and this woman will do everything she can to go toward God, as they get closer to God, they will get closer to one another. And folks, that's a prayer we pray in our youth group. Help us only to get close to one another as we get close to You. If you want your marriages to work, put God first in them. And the rest can take care of itself. And then lastly, do not let bad things be the evaluation on whether or not you have a spiritual relationship. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him unto a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain descended, the flood came, the wind blew, beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on a rock. And everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew, and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. I'll read you a verse. The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew, and beat on that house. Whose house was that? So you can't tell which house it was by what happened to it as far as rain, wind, and weather. The only way you know if it was the wise man's house or the fool's house is whether it stood or fell. All homes have problems. All homes have bad weather. All homes get rain, wind, and floods. Don't be sitting there thinking that if you've had some tragedy, if you've had some crisis, that that's a mark against you. No, 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 no. It's not what occurs around the house, but whether it makes that house stronger or destroys that house is whether you evaluate whether that house is built on the rock or not. You've been very kind. I'm honored by being here, but I can't close this without making you a challenge. Folks, I'm not perfect. The things that are in these three chapters, I dwell on them so much because they are devastatingly proof of the inadequacies I have as a spiritual man. And I know that there's some people out here who aren't trying, as hard as I need to try. There are some people out here who are not seeking first the kingdom of God. There are some people tonight whose treasure and heart are in the wrong place. They need to make a change.